X, session number 28625, reel 3.
We were able to eventually play golf and do different things like that.
But when you first arrived, did you feel that there was a tension in the air?
Oh yes, yes. There invariably is one of uncertainty and a way of what the future holds, how are we to react.
And when you mentioned as well that you were, you know, you were told, eventually told about Swaziland, you know, about that. Was that on the way down there, or once you actually arrived there, you know, that you started to learn more about the country?
Oh, when you got there.
Okay, so, so the men didn't know anything about it either, no?
Well, they did, as much as a briefing would afford them, from whoever was getting the report of what's coming in, and you were aware, really, basically, of what you had to do and what you were going into.
Okay. And you mentioned that it was like the monsoon season that you arrived. Mm. Did you have any waterproofs or anything to deal with this?
Not really. Mm. It's a ground sheet. But again, that rather impairs you when you're looking in a battle scene as such.
Okay. So you didn't have like your clothing wasn't like anything like Gore-Tex or anything like that?
Unheard of.
Okay. And you mentioned that you said you were angry when you first arrived as well. Why was that?
Well, I wouldn't say we were angry in the sense. We were apprehensive more than anything else. We'd arrived, we were rushed about, we had to act quickly, and we were wet, and you never knew what you were going into. And obviously, you become hungry at a certain period in the daytime, and all things being relative, we are very happy to contain our initial situation and show that we meant business before being released to go and get your bed and get your shower and get your warm and dry clothes and then on.
Okay. And this plane that you'd arrived on as well, was it like a normal passenger plane?
An Ariane plane.
Hmm. Is there seats inside there?
Obviously, yes. Yes.
So it's still the same idea?
Yes.
And so when you got off the plane, was it like a normal airport?
Small airport, yes.
Okay, and were the local police around you there to meet you?
I suppose they had been. Not that we noticed. I mean, we had to move so quickly from the plane to the trucks to get going.
Okay. And you mentioned that you were billeted in a school.
Yes.
Was that far from the airport?
3 minutes, half an hour.
So did you go there first?
No, 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 no. That's the last bit of the jigsaw.
Okay.
A few of us did. For example, I did to take it over and prep it, and it was a girl and a boy's wing who took over the boarding school. So you had beds and mattresses and pillows there, and we provided the rest.
So you had to take these supplies down with
you? Yes.
Gilgil. And so were you there for maybe a day or two before the men arrived?
No, I was in the same first plane that went, that part of it, and the soldiers went to see what was the problem, whereas the others went, like myself, to take over the bridge, so that as and when they returned, we were organised. We also had to take over the kitchen. I had a set of cooks. You have to see what you're... We used emergency rations to start off with, and then progressed to next rations.
And did that take a few days or something?
It does, yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But the system of the services is such that you always have a backup somewhere, that people are moving things forward. So it's a jigsaw, and those who are responsible for the provision would have been moving things nearer to the user.
And did you have good lines of communication that you knew what was coming down?
Yes, you always made aware, and you wanted to collect and deliver and receive and whatever. Mm-hmm.
And so would it be mostly telephone you'd used for that? Or?
Telephone and wireless.
Okay. And were you billeted in the school as well?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we all were in rooms.
Okay. Did you have a room to yourself? Or?
I shared, but a good room, in fact, good accommodation, travels, toilets and things. It's in very good condition. It was a very proud headmaster, very much concerned that our rubber boots were making a mess of the tiled floor. You know, we make sure we kept them clean, and you can imagine.
And was it rubber boots that you had there?
Rubber soled.
And did they have the?
We had. I'm sure we were into rubber boots by then. I feel sure we had the packety boots in Zanzibar.
Okay, so the rubber boots you were allowed to wear going about the school?
Oh, we did. I mean, you do option. But it was only in this to highlight the conditions of the school. It's not the floor coverings that you'd normally expect soldiers to have. It was like a modern, very light tile.
And were they, I know you said the showers and that were good, but was there enough of that type of thing to meet all the requirements of the
soldiers?
Absolutely,
yes, it was very good. Mm. Plenty of baths and showers, and a nice dining room, superb kitchen, very modern kitchen, freezer. Yes, we were very lucky.
Mm. What happened to the children who had been in the school?
I don't know. They weren't there. They'd moved elsewhere.
And do you think it had been like a European school or a religious school? Or something?
Yes, I'm not too sure on religion. It was certainly an English-speaking headmaster who had his house there, and we had to cooperate with him, which we did do, and I'm a very helpful person.
And did you go up to the area as well where the trouble had been?
Well, it was generally all over. I didn't get directly involved in that, no. My position was elsewhere.
But what about the rations that were going up here? Were you sending up rations? Or?
Yes, you'd send up hot meals and containers. I would do that sort of thing. That would be my involvement to make sure that they were all fed and as hot as possible.
And so did the men ever stay out like more than one day?
Yes, there were occasions as we progressed and they went further afield and they would stay and either be fed in hot container meal from me or use emergency rations.
And so was there ever any times that they got into situations like of conflict or difficulty, any of that you can remember, you know, maybe?
That was at a short duration, invariably. Most people in situations like that would confront an initial upsurge, which is fairly quickly subdued.
And what, you know, I know you said that it was political they were fighting over, but is Swaziland wealthy in any type of produce or a commodity that?
Yes, they have mines. I'm trying hard to think what they did mine. No, apart from that one, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Was it a wealthy type of country, or did you think it was quite poor?
No. Again, you had the very rich and the medium. I mean, there's a lot of poor people, but there's a lot of healthy, wealthy-looking people with Europeanized shopping complexes and things like that in the towns. But you obviously have poor natives.
Okay. And was it maybe like Kenya, you know, the terrain, was it hilly or flat?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Was there jungle?
Similar, no. Not aware of jungle, but certainly hills and agricultural, for instance, one farm that we go to visit at weekend and shoot had something like 40,000 square acres. There were some vast plains there with a range of animals that helped the pot, as it were.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. You know, was it like beef they would have maybe, you know, was that a beef farm or something, or was it more like
yes,
grains?
Yes. Both, a mixture there. Mm-hmm.
And what type of animals were you shooting? Was it wild game?
Well, there was wild game, yes. I was privileged to shoot a kudu one.
What's that?
A kudu is, I think, like a horse with a big, two spiral horns. And you're allowed two per gun per year. The person who took me kindly gave me one. You'd shoot antelopes and dikers and whatever. I mean, they were all in abundance.
What's a diker?
It's a little deer.
Did you eat them or anything?
Occasionally I'd take them back and my butcher would do the necessary and would hang them in the freezers. And it helped our store of food, isn't it?
Okay. When you say that they maybe got two of these other ones per gun, would that have been the farm itself that was allowed to shoot
the
two?
Gun, yeah. And the gun which had been registered.
It wasn't like your one?
No.
And what happened to your rifles and things? Did you have a rifle when you were across there?
We had, everybody had weapons, but we had our own security, our own armoury in the school, or whatever, wherever you go, you have an armoury.
And so was your weapons in the armoury most of the time?
Yes.
Did you ever take them out? Because
on occasions I would, depending on where I was going, but predominantly they were kept in the camp. You start off in a serious manner and you then proportionally readjust as the situation improves.
And how do you think the situation was improving?
Certainly in our time it did, quite remarkably. Everybody was full of praise of what we'd done, and we were relieved by the loyal regiment after a period of, I suppose, 3-4 months at that.
Okay. And so were the troops who were, you know, patrolling the area, were they ever in any situations of conflict?
No, not one that would require firing of shots or anything like that, no. Mm-hmm.
Do you think it was more their presence that was...
Yep, the deterrent, the awareness that we were there and prepared to do what was required, to sustain, to encourage them to go back to normal. Mm-hmm.
And had you ever to be careful, you know, like maybe just going about your everyday business, did you ever think... Oh, I better watch, you know, is this guy an enemy or anything else?
Not as much as perhaps you do in Ireland, but you were aware that you had to be fairly diplomatic. Generally speaking, we were comfortable in what we were doing.
And when you were saying diplomatic as well, did you have a lot of interaction with the locals?
Particularly when we were invited to any of the barbecues and things like that, and then you did, and then at the end I remember we one kind farmer who had went to school with our captain in Rhodesia had said, well look, I hear you're having a barbecue, he said, come up to my herd of cattle. He said, select whichever cow you wish, which we did do. And I was very lucky having a butcher and a professional killer in my team. And he pointed out the steer and we took it. And the local farm worker were absolutely amazed to find that we could do this sort of thing, butcher it and quarter it and skin it and take it along, and we hung it, and we then were able to put on a barbecue, and we had our pipe band along to play, and the people were very complimentary at what we produced for them to enjoy.
Okay.
So that was, again, in our hearts and minds, and you know, good relationship.
And so was that how things were working out, that you were trying to do this more hearts and minds?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. And so as the tension diminished, were you getting more out into the local community?
Yes, it was then that we were able to go and play games, for example, play football against them, and play golf, for example. And there's always something that they could do. And so the farmers would say, I'll take 6 jobs for the weekend, and off they would go and come back well fed and happy. And they'd enjoyed it. But that was a level of hospitality. Nice people.
Okay. And there's another gentleman who I interviewed, and he was speaking about he was invited to see the King of Swaziland ceremony with becoming his wife or something that year. Did you do anything?
No. He probably had enough wives from you. But yes, it's a strange system they have, that he has so many wives and so much wealth, but it's not distributed too favourably, which I think is a source of problem.
And did you ever see the king or anything, were you? Was there ever an occasion?
No, I can't recall that.
Okay. And so, how did you feel when it was time to go back, back to Kenya?
Well, we certainly had many, many happy memories of friendships and the fact that you'd done yet another good job, but looking forward to going back to your family. So, yes, you felt quite healthy about it.
And whilst you were in Swaziland as well, could you still communicate with your wife and family?
By writing only.
But letters were getting through.
Oh, yes.
And we were going to be speaking about, once he'd left Swaziland and went back to Kenya. So you got back with your family and back to the regiment. So what were you doing in Kenya at that time?
Having arrived back from Swaziland, we then had to, in addition to normal training and resettlement as such, we had the Zanzibar Independence Parade to rehearse for, select people and train them. And that comprised HMS Ark Royal, who would appear on the waters of Zanzibar when we actually did it. But I'd have 2 squads from them, 1 squad of local Zanzibarian police, and 3 squads of Gordon Highlander.
So were you actually sent back down to Zanzibar?
We went down there, yes. Our troops had come out of there before we went to Swaziland. They were left on their own, and here we were being asked to provide an appropriate compliment for a parade at midnight when the Duke of Edinburgh would come along with all the dignitaries, and the independence of Zanzibar would be granted. So I was a sergeant major by this time, and I was given the responsibility of training and coordinating all of this.
And was there a set pattern that you had to follow, or was it entirely up to yourself how you worked this parade and things?
Yes, it's normal format for such an occasion, where you'd all be dressed in your best finery and you'd all be lined up, like waiting an inspection as they walked around you, and you then march past them, and then you would advance and review order, given a present, which is a high compliment that you can pay, and then we fired a volley of shots and blank, and marched off and gave a salute to the Duke of Edinburgh and the dignitaries as we did so, and march off parade.
And is there a certain marches or something that you would do in times
well,
like this?
It's all part of ceremonial drill. And it's a reasonably accepted set format that you use. So we had to rehearse that, and I mentioned that the Gordon Highlanders had a different rifle to the Royal Navy. They had a different style of dress. We lift our feet up and put them down, and the Navy just put their heels together. And then we had the local police. And they had more old-fashioned rifles, and it was quite a task to get an acceptable standard system But it worked.
And so were you in charge of just the Gordon Highlanders?
So I had to train them all and coordinate them all. Obviously they were trained themselves before we did come together. But we went down and slept in tents and whatever in Zanzibar whilst we rehearsed each day prior to the actual parade, which was at midnight. And then 2 days after that, we all dispersed. And shortly after that, then they rioted and started to kill one another.
Okay. But before, you know, when you were practicing for the Independence Day Parade, how long of a time did you get together? You know, did the squadrons from the Ark Royal, the local police force and yourself, how much time to practice did you get?
Well, I would say less than a week. It's fairly obvious that the Ark Royal couldn't come into the harbour. It was lying off, as it were. But it had been a vast complement of ship's crew, and they were all there and all geared for trouble, just as exactly we were. But they would come in each day for a certain period when we had to do it, and we just worked hard and quickly and getting it together.
And what did you do about the different styles of marching? Did you all just have to carry on your same style, or did you do something about it?
Blended it together so that it looked similar.
And is that difficult to do?
Yes, well, I mean, it's like asking you to write with your left hand, and then when I shout, you change it to your right and continue with the flow. It just interpreted what was required, rather than like a conductor of a band and all playing the same key.
And did it take quite a lot of hours of practice?
Yes, as many as you could get. You never got enough. But it worked well enough, and we had a lot of people watching and great excitement.
And was it hot?
Very. I distinctly remember how the salty sweat was nipping my eyes, and we all wore kilts and jackets, and very, very uncomfortable in terms of sweating.
Even for the practice, you would wear your kilt?
No, on occasion, but normally shorts and boots. But when you're having, obviously, rehearsals and whatever, you put on kilts.
Okay. And how about the drill with the rifles? Did they have different drill with the rifles?
They had different rifles.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so did that make a lot of difference as well?
Well, it did, until we were able to compromise and accept what we could do in to the best of our ability.
Okay. And was the pipe band there as well?
Yes. Yes, they were. The military band, the pipe band, a very colourful parade.
Okay. And do you remember which month it was?
No. Sorry.
Was it hot?
Yes. It generally is throughout in that part of the world.
Okay. And round about the time that you were practising for the Independence Day parade and then the parade itself, did you think that there would be trouble starting again there?
Yes, that was always the sort of baseline that we realised that you'd never tidy up the whole system, that they would resort back to their original thoughts and actions. And this they did. The Arabs just didn't get on with the local factions and the Goans were in between. Yes, apparently there'd been quite a bloodbath, but we were off the island by this time. But we had troops on board ships which were lying off Zanzibar, just in case they had to go in. They didn't, actually. But at the same time, we also had more troops in Kenya, down in the Mombasa area. And whilst that was going on, and I was back in Gilgil with a very limited amount of men, the King's African Rifles who were some 25 miles away, they mutinied. So we had to go and help out in that situation. And the Zayas came up from Nairobi, and eventually we were able to subdue them, get them to surrender. And so, I mean, there we were, King's Afghan Rifle, part of a British traditional system, and they were mutinying. Just as the others were showing dissent. So it was quite a testing period of time. We also had our large advance party home in Scotland, in Edinburgh, preparing for us to go there. Well, in fact, we were left heavily committed with maybe insufficient people to do so.
It sounds a very busy place. It sounds, you know, with all this going on.
Yes, it was at that time. Very nice.
And you mentioned that you had some people down in Mombasa. Was that Gordon's as well?
Yes. And Gordon's on board ships. And we had some in Tanganyika. I mean, that whole area was festering until it was subdued.
And do you think the people were wanting independence? Do you think this is really what it was?
Well, one then asks, are they happy now? Very difficult.
Okay. I was thinking as well, the Independence Day Parade, do you think there'll be a film of it somewhere?
I'm unaware of that. I'm not aware that a film was taken. It certainly was a floodlit parade on the sports field, and with a lot of people in attendance.
Was it cool at midnight?
Not particularly. But I do remember enjoying a nice cold beer when we come off parade, and that was lovely, yeah.
And was there any type of celebration after it?
No, not for us. They did locally. The idea was that we would do a formal handover and parade, and then we would pack up and move really quickly after.
Okay. And you mentioned that you were all in your finery, your best finery.
Uh-huh.
What would have been your best finery for an occasion like that?
I would have had a white tropical jacket, all nicely dubbed and dressed, with your various accoutrements on. You'd have your dress, Glengarry, your kilt and your swan, and your spats, white spats, and your colourful hose and shoes.
You mentioned a dress Glengarry. Is there more than one Glengarry?
No.
And the kilt as well, I heard one officer telling me about, you know, once he became an officer, the stripes in his kilt were at a different position.
That's right.
Was that the same as yours?
Yes. The honorary jock's kilt has got the vertical yellow strip in the middle of his tummy. The officer moves it to virtually cover each leg.
So is that how your one was?
No, I was a sergeant major. I had vertical.
Okay.
And you only get it when you're the RSM and commissioned officers.
Okay, I thought at your level you maybe...
No.
Okay. And was there tailors with the regiment who would do all this work for you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you mentioned as well in Zanzibar that you were living in tents for this particular parade.
Yes.
And was that still down at the beach where you'd been originally? Or?
Some there and some elsewhere, but we were using the same basic facilities on a temporary basis.
Okay. And so were you supposed to be finished with Zanzibar then?
Yes, we were. We didn't go back again.
Okay, but what happened when the rioting started?
They were left, they had their independence, were left to resolve it, which they were able to do somehow, but as I say, it was reported that it was quite a bloodbath in a sense.
And were you off the island by then?
Oh yes. We did after the independence parade, that was the last we saw of it.
And you returned quite soon after that? It returned to Kenya, I mean?
Yes, within a couple of days.